Blog Talk Radio.
Equally shocking was the fact that for more than 30 years, the federal government
had protected some drug dealers.
As officers in the narcotic war, we saw the political choice made up close and personal.
One example, Levine said, was during the Nixon administration when he was about to bust a major source of heroin.
And I was not sucked cold because that source were our allies in the Vietnam War.
Levine said this was not an isolated incident, that it had happened many times in his 25-year career.
If it was a question of supporting people who supported our economic and political philosophies in other parts of the world, and they happened to be drug dealers, as most of them are, we supported them and we protected them. We protected them by looking the other way.
And the drug dealers had another ally in the war, money.
That it has a corrupting effect, whose tentacle...
That just goes to show, that's a YouTube video, by the way, that goes to prove that they've been involved with drug smuggling all along, and they always...
It's an example of think about, it's true, think about Afghanistan. We protect the Karzai government, which we know is corrupt, because they support whatever our agenda is over there.
Oh, yeah.
And what the corporation's agenda is, what their agenda is over there. So there's millions, maybe even billions of dollars lost to corruption over there.
Oh, sure.
And nothing is ever really done about it.
No, and the money comes into us. We're picking it up. Our banks are laundering it, okay, as well as other world banks are laundering it.
And our taxes, our money is going over there.
That's right.
It's like play money to the government.
Yeah, and it's just it's funding all the black op operations. So that was an old, much older interview, but there and again, it proved that that's been happening since.
Still going on today.
This is another thing that caught my eye today, which was, if you think GMO is scary, nanotech is here in your store. Right, and nanotechnology is a frightening thing because it's nanoparticles, radioactive particles that get in, and they can detect this. And now they're getting into your food. They're putting it into foods. They're putting it into stuff that you're eating, and they have no idea what kind of a long-term effect that it can
have. I would think it would have a bad effect.
Yeah, and it's in your stores and everything. So let's just go to this for a second, and we can read it.
From the Activist Post?
Yep.
You think GMO is scary? Nanotech is here in your store.
Right.
Nanotech, this is by Ian Gordon, RN contributor. Nanotechnology is measured in billionths of a meter, encompassing all aspects of life from food to medicine, clothing to space. Imagine hundreds of microcomputers on the width of a strand of a hair programmed for specific tasks in your body. Sound good? Engineering of a molecular level may be a future corporation's dream come true. However, nanoparticles inside your body have few long-term studies, especially when linked to health issues. Despite this new, huge, income-generating field, there is a growing body of toxicological information suggesting that nanotechnology, when consumed, can cause brain damage, as shown in large mouth bass, and therefore should undergo a full safety assessment. It is possible for nanoparticles to slip through the skin, suggestive of potential unnatural interaction with the immune system, or when microparticles enter the bloodstream. Some sunscreen on the shelf today, for instance, have nanoparticles that may be able to penetrate the skin, move between organs with unknown health effects. Nanoparticles in cosmetics have few regulations done by FDA. Thomas Foss of the Australian National University, who holds an Australian Research Council fellowship that looks at public nanotechnology health issues, said studies' findings are significant and strengthens the case for mandatory labeling, and that stringent safety data, whoops, we had a little jump in on our computer there.
Yeah.
Let's see where I lost my place. Sorry, folks.
White House executive pastry chef Bill Yosef,
who explained and demonstrated to the audience members how the food of the future will not actually contain real food, but rather various combinations of lab-created chemicals that mimic food. As reported on 6-1 News, a feature of RTE News in Ireland, Yosef and several other food experts showed a live audience how to create various forms, foams, gels, solids, and other food-like texture substances out of chemicals that, when combined, resemble things like lemon souffle and chocolate pudding. These food scientists then shared samples of these laboratory creations with audience members who were told that the imitation food products are the wave of the future. You can take the chemical compounds and you make the dish, said Hervé, of AgroParis Tech, a science and research organization based in France, to RTE News in Ireland. So you have no vegetables, no fruit, no meat, no fish, nothing except compounds. And you have to create a shape, a color, a taste, a freshness, a pungency, and astringency, everything, he added, liking traditional cooking methods such as cracking eggs and using the real food ingredients to living in the Middle Ages. Well, okay.
White House executive pastry chef Bill Yossi's shared a similar sentiment as he believes creating fake food out of chemicals will actually help improve the quality of cuisine and availability of food. He told 6-1 News, as chefs can use the information he presented to gain a better understanding of what they're doing and use that to improve the processes to improve not only the flavor but the hygiene, the longevity, and how to store things.
All that comes about from understanding cooking on a really molecular level, he added, was sort of a twinkle in his eye. But when he was asked if these same chemical food experiments are used at the White House in meals to serve the Obamas, Yosef laughed and said no, exclaiming that the first family is looking for traditional, sort of happy recipes that people are familiar with.
Yeah, and it says you can watch this and go to Natural News, and they have an actual video on this. And he says, while intending to specifically showcase some of the more offbeat scientific developments circulating the technosphere today, the Euroscience Open Forum, including the troubling seminar on chemical-based foods for the future, is actually a troubling foreshadow of what may soon come for Americans. Some scientists are apparently of the strong persuasion that man-made food items are preferable to natural foods, and the former is what they hope the public will eventually accept.
The average person, in other words, will eventually be accepted to happily eat green gelatin-like blobs made of chemical compounds, along with ambiguous cracker products that resemble soylent green, while the White House and the world's other elites continue to eat wholesome natural foods, including those handpicked from Michelle Obama's organic garden.
Yeah. So, you know, folks, grow your own gardens. Yeah.
Well, you won't have any food.
But you know how much stuff that is already? I mean, we grew up in the 50s. I mean, Jell-O, all right? Hamburger helpers, all that crap. That was all. There's nothing natural about any of that. It was all chemicals, right? Margarines.
I don't eat those things.
No, no, but I mean that's what we grew up on in the 50s. All your Miracle. Remember Kraft's recipes.
No.
Jeez.
Well, my family didn't.
You didn't have TV.
My family didn't serve those things.
Yeah, but didn't you ever see that stuff?
No.
A lot of crafts everywhere in all the ladies' magazines and everything.
No,
still
we didn't eat those things.
Oh, my God, you were sheltered.
I guess so.
I mean, that stuff was all over the place. You never ate Jell-O?
No, not really. We didn't eat that.
You never had a Jell-O?
Yeah, well, we had some, but it wasn't a regular in our family. No, we
Jeez,
didn't.
You never ate Jell-O.
We didn't eat margarine. We didn't eat those.
Never ate Jell-O. It's amazing. Never eat any instant food, instant puddings, instant anything like that?
Chocolate pudding, maybe.
Yeah, okay. So, I ate a lot of that stuff. But anyway, That was the stuff growing up as a baby boomer. You grew up with all kinds of instant foods and artificially flavored stuff. That was common.
Well, those are chemicals.
Yeah. I mean, it's all chemical. So, you know, it's no different. But
I think it's a bit different here.
Not a hell of a lot different.
You don't think
so? No, because that's exactly what they do with the. I'm not telling you, but I mean that's exactly. If you eat Jell-O, you know that's it. Fake everything. I mean, macaroni and cheese. You know, everything that. Even Kraft cheese, American cheese. That's all processed cheese, right? That stuff wasn't made out of milk at all.
Plastic.
Yeah. So, I mean, geez, man. I mean, it's like all the stuff we know today, all these name brands were all artificial foods. This one I was grateful to see.
Maybe that's why Americans eat so much, because they're not getting any nutrition.
The nutrition is terrible. They're starving. They're starving, exactly. There's a funny article about McDonald's being the sponsor for the Olympics.
Oh, geez, if people like that, they wouldn't be able to walk, never mind run or swim or race.
No, but they're sponsoring it. I mean, they're sponsoring it as good health, you know, healthy foods and stuff, you know.
Oh, well.
Unbelievable. Well, anyway. This has always bothered me when I saw this in the school system, where kids are being routinely recruited, by
poor
the
kids.
Marines and by the Army and by the Navy and when you realize that one out of four Marines right now and military guys are committing suicide.
Okay.
I mean, you got to tell you, this is not the kind of business that you want your kid to be in, maybe, huh?
I wouldn't think so.
But, you know, they do it, and the parents aren't saying anything about it, and now it's law that if you take federal money as a school system, you have to allow recruiting. So I was grateful to hear that California is standing up to it.
Marines aim to counter teachers' opposition.
San Diego. The bellowing from the drill instructors began as soon as the newcomers arrived. Get off the bus, Mark 1 DI. It's a ritual reenacted countless times since 1923 when the first young men began coming to boot camp to see if they were tough enough to be Marines. But last week's groups were not composed of frightened young recruits. Instead, they were high school teachers, guidance counselors, and administrators who from school districts in Los Angeles and Sacramento. All had accepted the Marine Corps' invitation to spend 4 days at the Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego, watching the training and talking to recruits, enlisted Marines, and senior officers. While some areas of the state embrace the military, the Los Angeles Unified School District, second largest in the country, has been more reticent. It gives recruiters no more access to students or their information than is granted to any other potential employer, and parents and other students also are allowed to restrict
the release of personal information to military recruiters. Some teachers in the district have launched. Some teachers in the district have launched counter-recruiting efforts, warning students of physical danger, regimentation, loss of privacy, and individuality that comes with military service. Others put students on don't call lists. The U.S. continues to fight in wars that are opposed by the public. And yet the military can recruit with little opposition because working-class kids have few job options, said Joshua Peschall, president of the California Federation of Teachers and a critic of the Marine Corps program. Good for him. The Marine Corps hopes to counterbalance such hostility by inviting educators to what is called an educator workshop. A dozen times a year, the Marines welcome groups of about 80 educators to the San Diego boot camp. Most come from schools west of the Mississippi, the San Diego boot camp's recruiting region. The Marine Corps picks up the tab for travel, lodging, and incidentals, about $800,000 a year. The Marine Corps other boot camp in Parris Island, South Carolina, has a similar program. Please ask a lot of questions, Colonel Michael Lee, commanding officer of the Recruit Training Regiment in San Diego, told the group once the drill instructors stopped screaming. The best thing you can do is gain knowledge and go back and share it with people who don't have it. An early question from one teacher was whether recruits may someday go to war. The answer from Colonel Robert Gates, chief of staff for the boot camp in the Western Recruiting Region, was direct. The Marine Corps is primarily a combat arms organization. That's what we do, he said. But he noted that U.S. involvement in Afghanistan is waning. One teacher asked whether the Marine Corps is a refuge for young men who would otherwise be sent to jail. Maybe long ago, but not today, said Gates. Military service is not an alternative to incarceration or paying a debt to society, he said. Is all the yelling, marching, and physical strain really necessary, asked another. Yes, said Lee, because it pushes recruits to their limits and teaches them not to quit. That's the method to the madness, he said. Can high school dropouts enlist in the Marines? Only under extraordinary circumstances. 99.7% of last year's recruits were high school graduates. The educators watch recruits at the obstacle course, rifle range, bayonet training area, and the swimming pool, where they learn to tread water while wearing combat gear. There were side trips to Miramar Marine Corps Air Station and Camp Pendleton.
Yeah.
Oh boy, it sounds like they're trying to sell it.
Oh, they are. Yeah. But I have to agree with the teachers on that. You know, and I think it's
in a series of PowerPoint briefings, this is kind of long.
Yeah,
it just goes on.
But Melissa Chang, Chinese language teacher at South Pasadena, says she believes she can now overcome resistance from her students' parents. Chinese parents have a kind of bias against the military, she says, but the Marine Corps believes in discipline and honor, which are very Chinese values.
Alain Inouye, a speech therapist in L.A. Unified, who has spearheaded the counter-resisting effort, attended a workshop several years ago but was still unmoved. She was impressed with how respectfully she was treated by the Marines. They really want you to come because they're so convinced that, in a way, the elected treasurer of the Los Angeles Teachers Union, they feel they can turn anyone around.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I don't have a good idea about it.
You've got to ask them what their survival, how many of those 97% recruits survived their first
point.
Year, you know. Anyway, let's see if I got a quickie here. Oh, this is really important. I wanted to touch on this tonight before we go to our guest.
Play it quickly.
Yeah, it's only 3 minutes long.
It's on Robert Holmes.
And it's on James Holmes, the shooter. And it just talks about how Robert Holmes, his father, he was a whistleblower for the financial community, and they it looks like they set him up. This is Dutch.
Hey everybody, Dutch Sense here. 3:33 a.m. Central Time on Saturday, July 28, 2012. And I didn't plan that time, by the way, but let me just go ahead and read this to you guys. We have more breaking news regarding the Colorado shooter, but this is new breaking news that is not going to be talked about in the mainstream. And I'll just read it to you as it came to me. It came to me from Carla Miller, who I want to give a shout-out to, and thanks for getting that out, and to Tim Hammond for spreading the news. And I've got a link for the whole article you guys can go read. I'll put that down below. But here it is as it came to me. A disturbing connection emerges with Colorado shooter. His father is set to testify regarding the LIBOR scandal. This is only part of the article. Quote, most important to note about James Holmes, the shooter, however, this report says, is that his father, Robert Holmes, was said to have been scheduled to testify within the next few weeks before a U.S. Senate panel on the largest bank fraud scandal in world history that is currently unfolding and threatens to destabilize and destroy the Western banking system. And stop right there. For those of you who don't know what LIBOR is or what's going on with the quote-unquote Illuminati banksters, big banksters, getting taken down by this European and international criminal court case that literally could put them in jail. But you have to go look that up. I don't have time to explain that to you now. Just understand that that's going on, and that's what this is regarding. Now back to the story. Robert Holmes, whose blue blood family links go back to the Mayflower, is known throughout the global banking community as being the creator of one of the most sophisticated computer algorithms ever developed, and is credited with developing predictive models for financial services, credit and fraud risk models, first and third-party application fraud models, and internet online banking fraud models. Educated at the University of California, Berkeley, Stanford University, Robert Holmes is currently the senior lead scientist with the American credit score company, FICO, which was formerly known as Bearer, Isaac & Company, and which every American citizen is beholden to should they need to borrow money. It's your credit score. Okay? So there you go. That's his father. Now, he's deeply connected in the science community, and they're trying to tell us he's just an average guy. Well, apparently not. Okay, he's not just an average guy. Average guy doesn't have this for parents. I'm just saying. Okay? So, much love, guys. Get the news out, and if you find any more information on this, let me know. I'll link the whole article and story as it came to me down below.
There's another... There's another great the article from Red Ice Creation. Go to that and check it out. The full article on James Holmes and on this. If we have time tonight, I'll read some of it. But right now,
we gotta go to our guest.
We have to go to our guest, and we'll do that.
Did he call in? We have a caller.
Oh, that's Jimmy. Hey, Johnny, I didn't see you. We just saw you there.
Yeah, I just had a follow-up audio of the James Holmes, alleged Aurora shooter.
Right. We just played that.
About the eyewitness?
About his father, yeah. Oh, no. No, about his father being the...
A mathematician and connected with
the
programs.
Testifying before the Senate Committee on bringing down the Illuminati banking system.
Well, I've got a two... I know you've got a guest coming on. If you can give me 2 minutes, I can play this. It's a two-minute audio. It's one of the police from the crime lab seen claiming there's only one shooter. The eyewitness testimony from the other people who were in the cinema say something else. If you want me, I'll run it real quick by you guys.
Oh, because I really got to go. But if you can hold, I'd like
yeah,
to
we can hold. Okay.
Right after, because the guy's waiting for me to call him. Okay.
Okay. Well, how long is he gonna be on for?
If you'd like, you can talk to him as well. If you'd like to talk, if you have a question, it's 911, architects and engineer.
Oh, Mr. Gage, okay.
And Costa, yeah.
So hold on, and when our interview is finished, then you can play that, okay?
Okay, it's queued up, ready to go. Go ahead, that's great.
You got a question for him, I'll put you on.
Okay, no, I'll listen in. Go ahead.
I just got to get a call in there. So.
Leo's calling our guest.
Our guest is Wayne Costi, and
hello, this is Wayne.
Yeah, hi Wayne, how are you? This is Leo and my co-host Lila. How are you?
Good evening, Wayne. How are you?
I'm fine. What was your name?
I'm Lila.
Lila, thank you.
Thank you for agreeing to be on the show. And it's great that you guys are going to be that you'll be in Torrington. I'm sure you'll get a wonderful turnout. And would you tell our listening audience...
Just tell them
a little bit about
your organization and,
yeah.
Of course, about the movie that's coming up. But I think most people should know something more about your organization.
Okay, are we online?
Yes,
now?
You are. You're online.
Okay, great.
Great. Yes, my name is Wayne Costi, and I'm a registered professional engineer. I'm one of nearly 2,000 architects and engineers that have signed a petition calling for new investigation into the destruction of the three World Trade Center skyscrapers on September 11th. The organization is focused on the technical issues of in trying to do the outreach to let people know that there's a problem with the official explanation for how these buildings were destroyed. The organization has been in existence for about 5 years, 4 or 5 years now. As I said, we've got nearly 2,000 architect and engineers, petition signers. They are verified and vetted. You have to have a degree or be a licensed professional engineer like myself, because then you can just check with the state to be a member. So that's a little bit about who we are. We've just released a new documentary called 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out, that has 43 of our petition signers giving their understanding and their expertise to explain why the official story can't be true, and identifying that the evidence that fits most of the or the evidence points towards the use of pre-planted explosives and incendiaries to actually have destroyed the buildings. And so
do you believe that there were actually many nuclear explosives in there because of the pulverization of the concrete? They say that these kind of mini nukes had to be used in order to do that. Is that true or not?
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be true, and it doesn't seem like there's, you know, the evidence doesn't seem to be there to support the use of what you're calling a highly destructive ordnance. The way that the
concrete just cascaded down the instead of the thing crumbling, it just was completely particleized. There had to be some massive explosion to do that.
Well, yes, and when I do my outreach, I tend to show a number of videos as part of a street fair. I usually have a laptop and usually in a shaded area under a canopy. And if you look up underneath the debris cloud, there are some videos that show the top of the South Tower starting to tip over, and then it starts to disappear. And then you can see floor by floor by floor by floor ejections of material as the building is basically being exploded outwards. You can actually kind of see that. To me, it would seem really difficult to have what people would classically call nuclear weapons involved in such a controlled method. Now, Architects and Engineers doesn't know how the buildings were actually destroyed. We weren't part of it, so we don't have access to a lot of information about what actually happened.
I don't think anybody does have much forensic information on that, because it was all taken away within 3 or 4 days. All the steel was removed from the site.
Yeah, the steel was removed, and I think the cleanup was officially declared done by I think March of 2002 or someplace around there. So it took about 6 months of extensive removal to remove the steel and the remnants of the building. Now, the thing that has that's really characteristic of the cleanup is when they were doing the cleanup, they would look at the dust and they would say, "Is this dirt or World Trade Center dust?" Or powder, whatever you want to call it, and they would look to see if there were tiny iron spheres in the dust, and the tiny iron spheres were characteristics of this dust, and the source of those is likely to be some material. There are remnants of something called thermite, nanothermite, a very highly mixed version of thermite that is present in little red-gray chips that are throughout the dust. These little red-gray chips are aluminum platelets and iron oxide, when they are heated up to 420 degrees centigrade, it reacts quite violently, and it does that by the aluminum will grab an oxygen molecule off the iron oxide and create molten iron and aluminum oxide that goes off as kind of a white smoke.
Can I ask you a question?
We have a caller also on the air. Would he be able to ask you a question? His name is John Brennan.
Oh, I can answer calls, but I do want to make sure that we get to a little bit about the event that we're going to be hosting, which is a showing of Experts Speak Out at the Torrington City Hall Auditorium, 107
mm-hmm.
Main Street, Torrington. At 6:15 to about 9 o'clock on August 22nd. That'll be a Wednesday. Okay?
Yeah,
all right.
You live in Connecticut, I guess, right?
Yes, I actually live nearby and am in the Farmington Valley. So.
Okay, I have, before John asks you a question, who's our caller, I have a question for you. We're a number of years from 9/11, and the event was already investigated and put to rest by the government. What is your goal of your organization, and what is your goal of traveling around bringing this information? What is it that you want to accomplish? Do you want to reopen investigation? Do you want to make sure that history has the accurate information? What is it that you want to achieve through this?
Well, those are great questions. The organization's mission statement is calling for a new investigation into the destruction of these buildings, including all of the evidence, including the evidence that is plentiful for the use of explosives. That is the official goal. And if there's a kind of an unofficial goal, it's basically to let people know that the story that they've been told is really, really wrong, and that they should be really kind of cautious of what they're hearing in the mainstream media, because if this story can be hidden in plain sight, what other stories that aren't so physically undeniable are being hidden in plain sight also? So.
Okay, John, if you have a question, go ahead and ask it.
Yes, good evening. I was just listening to you talk about the thermites, but haven't seen a lot of the videos, and I actually watched the towers come down that day and have reversed the shots to see the slow motion as the buildings were falling. Certainly, I think they may well have used some thermite, but that really only concerns the sort of demolition of the steel structures. The fact that Leo asked you about micro nukes, which are an admitted part of the U.S. military's demolition arsenal, so to speak. Those are the size of a pineapple, and they're basically like 400 tons of TNT all compacted. It's sort of like your daisy cutter type of things. They don't like to tell you that they're nuclear. There's a lot of nuclear things in the military's arsenal. And if it was part of our military or the Mossad, which are linked at the hip, you could say, anyway, and the Mossad was, or some of their crowd were caught in a van on the near the George Washington Bridge, full of explosives, and these were let go. So I don't know if those explosives were nuclear and they were intending to take down the George Washington Bridge, but certainly just, I think, to be going on the thermite thing is not explaining the pulverization, as Leo said, of the concrete. The pictures of the cars down on the streets covered in the dust. I know if you have concrete of any sort, when you pour it, it was 4 inches thick on each floor, and there's none of that left. There's no pancakes at the bottom. So there is something other than regular demolition explosives going on there, and I think the architects and engineers might even want to look back at the Oklahoma City building, because it's obviously the same crew that pulled it off, because of, if you look at the way the back column, I forget what the number of the column was, on the Oklahoma City building, it was way back from the street, and there's definitely no way the rider Chuck was the only bomb that went off that day, because the building across the street, which was an old red brick factory, really got minimal damage. And those type of devices in car bombs, as we saw in Northern Ireland, are very concentric, like when you drop a stone into the water, the rings from the shock waves go outwards in all directions. But in that case in Oklahoma, it appeared to be just all went towards the building and to the back of the building. So would you consider, you know, investigating that along with the Trade Center demolition?
Okay. So there's multiple parts to the question. And so I'll first address the Oklahoma City issue. First of all, there's a brand new documentary that's just been released. Well, it's been out for several months now, called A Noble Lie, and it's all about the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, I have a copy myself, but I have not yet had the time to watch it.
Very important video.
Right. Again, the name is A Noble Lie, and it, from what I understand from people who've watched it, say that from a technical point of view, they can't find any place where there's been an overstepping of what the evidence actually shows. So architects and engineers right now, believe me, has its hands full with trying to get the word out about the three skyscrapers at the World Trade Center. And so we're going to remain focused on that. I haven't heard of any. I'm only a volunteer for them, so I can't speak with authority, but there has been no discussion about changing our mission to.
What's your opinion on building number 7?
Well, before we go on, I'd like to address kind of the micro nuclear issue, since it's been raised.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Yet again. There are the thermite appears to have been adequate to break the structures, but there's also evidence of a significant amount of high explosives. And if you take a look at the EPA's air quality monitoring immediately after 9/11, they came up with an extraordinary level of a particular chemical in the air called, I'm going to get it wrong, so don't hold me to my what I'm going to say here, but it's 1,2,3-dibenyl butane. I think there's another word in there someplace, but what it is, it's a chemical that the EPA has never seen before in its air quality monitoring, and as a result, they provide no explanation for where it could be coming from. Other people have said that it is a byproduct of a lot of high explosives. So there is evidence for a lot of high explosives, and not necessarily the micronuclear devices. And maybe there were, but it's not. It doesn't seem to be necessary. It seems like there's plenty of other things that added energy to the destruction of the buildings that made it so complete. So,
just one other thing, real quickly. There was a gentleman there called John Feel. He had the Feel Good Foundation for the firemen, basically, to get funding for them. He had said in one interview that 6 weeks later, the tracks on the excavators on the site were melting. The thermite would not be still hot. The rock was molten. There's actually pictures down in the, I guess they call it the bathtub now, down at the bottom of the site was glowing red hot, melting the buckets, popping the hydraulic lines. I don't know if you were familiar with that. So some other heat source that would have to be on a par with what a nuclear demolition in the basement to, they usually blow the towers, any large building into its own footprint. And that is what more people are really suspicious about. And my only hope is you guys would go and look a little deeper, so to speak, into that and I thank you for everything you guys are doing. That's all I have to say, really.
Okay, well, thank you. But let me respond to this. Now, if there were a nuclear explosion, I think what you're going to find, at least with the ones that I've seen that have been publicly displayed, is there's a huge heat source instantly, and then after that, there's nothing. There's a modest amount of decay, a radioactive decay, all of which would be very visible to anyone with a Geiger counter, right? And I don't recall there being a lot of people alarmed by radiation.
They wouldn't allow Geiger counters at the Trade Center in the weeks afterwards. There was no Geiger counters allowed to be brought into New York City.
Well, I can't speak to that. Now let me just talk about the continuing heat generation in the basement. Now, if there were this vast amount of thermite that was in the dust, and we found in the dust many fragments of this. Now, if the basements and all these other places in the bathtub were a mixture of concrete and thermite, as it would heat up, as it would stay there baking, so to speak, underground, the thermite, all it needs to do is get up to 420 degrees centigrade, and potentially the hotter it gets, the more thorough the reaction could be, because you may have insulation between one dust tip and another, with some dust, legitimate dust in the middle. So as the temperatures continue to bake, the thermite could have continued, the remnants of it could have continued to react for months. And as you know, the fire departments were also pouring vast amounts of water on this, and thermite will actually burn underwater because it has its own oxygen, because it's the aluminum grabbing an oxygen molecule off the iron oxide. And that would explain that. And if you want to talk about the dust, what you can imagine is that if there's now 5 to 6% of some samples of the dust, and dropping down to 0.5% in many others, are tiny iron spheres, remnants of this incendiary. If these are in fact still red hot and reacting, and they land and cover the cars in Lower Manhattan, the roofs are going to look pretty bad. And some of them, the doors are, some doors are completely covered, and the side panels behind them aren't. Possibly the door was open. We don't know each and every one of them. But with this thermite in the air as it's entrained and flowing, if you just need to have a small piece of it land on top of the windshield, it doesn't take much heat to actually go through the windshield and drop into the floor and create an inferno inside the cars, to explaining some of the vehicles that burned up in these funny ways. To me, everything can be reasonably explained by the thermite, the cars weren't turned to toast, as I understand it, immediately. They kind of took a while for them to bake and turn into toasted cars. So, I've answered those questions. So, was there a next one?
Yeah, my next question is, I just wanted to mention the name of the movie, which is Engineers Speak Out.
Yes, it's 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. Again, it's 43 of our petition signers talking about.
It's at the Torrington Town Hall, correct?
The Torrington City Hall Auditorium.
Right.
Now, where is that? Do you have a street address?
I have 107 Main Street.
Okay.
In Torrington.
107 Main Street.
And the time of the event?
It's going to be 6:15. The doors will open shortly before then.
On August 22nd, correct?
That's correct.
And you're expecting a big crowd, I hope?
Well, we are expecting the auditorium will seat, I think, 150, and we sure would like to see it packed. And we appreciate the opportunity to promote it a little bit on your show here, and talk about an issue that I think is really important to talk about. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
What is? I just wanted to ask you. I don't have a calendar with me here, but I'm curious. What day is that? The
22nd.
Is that a Saturday?
No.
No, it's a Wednesday.
Oh, it's a Wednesday. Okay, thank you. All right.
So it's Wednesday evening.
August 27th, Wednesday evening at 6:15 at the Tarrington Town Hall Auditorium.
On Main Street.
On Main Street.
At 6:15.
All right, Wayne, thank you so much for being on with us, and we look forward to... are you going to be talking there, or are you just going to be present?
Well, I'm going to be giving a short introduction. And then I'll be showing the video, and then I'll be taking questions from the audience.
I think the main point to remember is that the most important thing is that what you're presenting conflicts with the official explanation of what happened.
Oh.
And that's the most important thing.
We appreciate what you're doing, and we wish you the best of luck.
And thanks for doing this. Thanks for being on our show.
Yeah.
Well,
can I just say something quickly?
There at Torrington. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead, Johnny.
I just want to tell Wayne, in Torrington, I'll do some flyers and get them out for you to promote it. There's also there's a piece of the 9/11 steel at the North End Fire Station. They put up a big 9/11 memorial, and I'm sure a lot of the firemen there will be, if we can get them to go, will be poo-pooing the whole thing, like it was Al-Qaeda took it down, and, you know, it was definitely the planes. So maybe we can get some good conversation going there. If I can get them to go.
Well, you know, I'll just say that last fall I was at the 128th Connecticut Firefighters Parade and Convention, and I had a table there and talked to a lot of firemen, and the ones that talked to me were generally very very sympathetic to the cause.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I was just going to say, some said, isn't it so far in the past that we shouldn't worry about it? And I was just a little surprised.
Yeah, that was the attitude I got, too. Let's put this thing to bed, was their exact words.
Well,
they were telling us to shut up, I think, you know. But.
Here's my response. I said, so you're a firefighter, I said. Imagine you're at the scene of an arson, and a sniper takes down one of your guys. When are you going to stop looking for the shooter?
I think it's good point.
The answer is never.
I love
it. And they know it. So,
yeah.
At any rate, thank you very much, and look forward to seeing you in Torrington.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wayne. All right.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye now.
And so John,
I don't know how much time we have left. This is just a two-minute audio. It's, again, dealing with the Batman, the shootings, we'll call it, in the eyewitness testimony of witnesses. I'm going to play the audio of contradicts. The official story, and so I'm going to play first of all the official story. You're going to hear a local crime scene cop talking, so I'll play it right now.
Yeah, I just want to mention we have about a minute and a half.
Hold on, I have to cancel my audio. Sorry, Leo, I didn't hear you.
I said we have about a minute and a half left, but we'll play it. We'll just be going over. But anybody who's listening live right now,
all Mr. Holmes' activity, and that he wasn't particularly aided by anyone else.
Well, I noticed the guy walked in from into the auditorium, sat into the very front row to the far right, and he got a phone call, and most people, when they get phone calls in theaters, they go straight out into the lobby to answer it. This person went directly to the emergency exit to take his phone call, which I thought was unusual. He seemed like he had his foot propped open by the door, and from the crack, it looked like he was signaling somebody or looking for somebody to come his way.
Reaching down to get my seat, I noticed that a person came up to the front row, to the front right, sat down, and as credits were going, I know it seemed like he got a phone call. So he went out towards the emergency exit doorway, which I thought was unusual, to take a phone call. And it seemed like he probably pried it open or probably didn't let it latch all the way. Soon as the movie started, somebody came in, all black, gas mask, armor, and threw a gas can into the audience, and it went off, and then there was gunshots that took place.
From what we saw, he wasn't alone. He had someone with him because the
second can of tear gas didn't come from his side. He was completely dressed in black, head to toe.
I'm going to cut it there because I know you don't have time. But basically, this is on YouTube. Batman Eyewitnesses Testimony Contradicts the Official Story, if you want to check it out.
Yeah, and people listen to the archives, so you can keep going, John.
Okay. There's a little more, but basically, you know, it appears it's another one of the Illuminati guys, whether he was mind-controlled. Well, he was mind-controlled. There's something going on that we don't know about, but it wasn't just a random shooting. It was timed to be thrown at the American people as Hillary is trying to sign the banning of guns for the American people, basically.
John, the biggest thing tonight today that just came out, and I suggest that you go to this Red Ice Creations.
Yeah, I heard you talk about that before. I'll check it out after the show now.
Yeah, or you can get it right off David Icke's site.
Or Icke's site, or the other one is Government Slaves. Go to governmentslaves.com. All right?
Okay.
David Icke's site is the best. Just go there.
Governmentslaves.com has the original article. All right? The original article.
A lot of people that I meet on the street are now, for the first time, realizing that this definitely is a false flag sort of a story. And a lot of them are beginning to now go back and re-question 9/11. So some good will come out of this to awaken the sleeping giant called the United States before they try and disarm us completely.
I hope so.
Well, I think that's only one part of the issue. I think it has more to do with the bank scandal.
It possibly has that as well. Yeah, it's also taken the heat off that, and there's probably a lot of other things. They're going around in Syria doing the Nazi type operations. They're exactly unbelievable carnage. Go to Press TV and see what they say that's going on there. What NATO and the American troops have carried out atrocities.
But read that article on Red Ice Creations. On Red Ice, and you'll see that it'll completely confirm, you know, the reasoning behind that that bombing, not the bombing, but the shooting.
Yeah.
It's very scary.
Incredible, John. That his father, John Holmes' father, James Holmes' father, worked for DARPA. James Holmes worked for DARPA.
Right. And people, the DARPA is one of those divisions of our military that basically delves into all of the highest level mind control and the MKUltra type of experiments on the human mind.
Well, you know what? What his father was supposed to testify is still due to testify before the Senate hearing committee, all right, on financial fraud, all right? And because his father was one of the creators, okay, of the system that can identify
where the money goes,
where it went, okay. So he knows, based on this information, based on the software program that he invented through DARPA, through his software company, all right, where the trillions of dollars went.
So, okay, for example, folks, and John, when Corzine was interviewed and he said, "Oh, I don't know where the money went. I have no idea. It's all gone. It's lost.
$30 billion all of a sudden gone.
He can find it.
He'll know where that went.
He knows which account through
all
this
the European
program.
Accounts, all these European accounts, and the LIBOR accounts. All right, and all of this is Illuminati money." All right, Illuminati groups, okay, that he was ready to testify against, okay, before the Senate Committee, Committee on Finance, to prove that this entire system, all these monies were stolen, all right?
Yeah.
And what happened was, 2 weeks before he was due to go there, guess what?
His son
becomes, the worldwide mass murderer, all right?
Yeah, and they have a particular drug. Someone told me about it just this morning. It's called scopolamine, And it basically, it's known as devil's breath, if you want to check that one out. And it basically can completely put you into a trance-like state and make you do anything you want in a very short time. They may have put him on that.
John, scopolamine has been around for a long time. It's called twilight sleep.
Right. Another name, yeah.
Give that to people, to women in childbirth.
It puts you into a trance, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It could put you in the right doses into a trance-like state. You can be very easily persuaded.
Uh-huh.
That's one of its, I don't know what levels they give you at childbirth, but...
It would explain his whole demeanor now, okay?
He's confused.
He doesn't know where he is. And
right.
He claims he has no memory of anything that he did, right? He's stating that he's got complete amnesia, but his reactions and his actions, all right.
Who knows what they injected him with?
It looked like the guy was totally doped up, you know, or totally brainwashed. And you know the other funny thing about it is that he immediately after he supposedly did the crime, he gave himself up. Right.
Yeah, that's very odd.
He didn't even give himself up. He just sat there.
He sat there.
And he also told them he had the apartment rigged, and supposedly it was a very highly sophisticated rig-up job, which we never saw for photographs because they're lying about it. And why would you go to all that trouble to do all those booby traps and then just say, oh, by the way, you know, you put places booby traps, tip them off. Who gave him the money for the guns if he was just a poor student? Some of those rifles were like $2,000 each, and the flash grenades and those type of things, the gas grenades, are only things that the special forces or the Homeland Security guys or the general mainstream sort of military can get, not the mainstream media, the mainstream military. Riot squad types, you know. So he was helped for sure.
And the other thing that really convinced me that this guy was not was probably didn't do it, right?
Or mind control.
Was totally under mind control, but or maybe he didn't even do it. Was the fact that he did give up like that, and when they arrested him, they put this stuff on his hands, all right, these bags on his hands. He started to act like they were hand puppets. Okay,
right.
He was totally out of it. Totally, absolutely out of it. All right? All the way until he was arrested and processed, and then even to the next day, all right, he like had no memory of it. And then what happened? A couple of days ago, they found that they suddenly find this magical book that appeared in a psychiatrist's, in the mailroom, all right? Did you hear about all of his writings?
Sort of like the passport just flying out of the plane on 9/11 through the flames and everything.
That they found Muhammad Atta's passport on the ground after that huge thing.
Yeah, it's becoming juvenile. The setups aren't even realistic anymore, and they might as well have cartoon figures going in doing these things because the public is not buying it. And more people since this event have gone out and bought semi-automatics. And I would say to people, if you never wanted one and you never ever thought you might have to use one, I'm afraid if you don't have one and they put a martial law situation and the economy crashes, you could be in real trouble. It might be time to exercise your Second Amendment, which is not about guns. It's about tyranny, about the government becoming tyrannical, if you read it carefully. If you can't defend yourself against a tyrannical government, I'm afraid you could be in big trouble, you know, in the future.
The sad part is so many people have been killed.
Yeah, but, you know, a lot of people don't realize that the people who are asking to take our guns away are the same people our biggest export in this country is armaments. We make Black Hawk helicopters, submarines for other countries, all the more military landmines that kill men, women, and children in huge amounts every day. So they can't have it both ways. Either they love us or they hate us. They won't stop having the military and our police, like the one in Torrington shot a 78-year-old man point blank, you know, for just having a kitchen knife or something on the street. The man was disturbed. They could have tasered him. They could have pepper sprayed him. They could have done karate on him. They could have billy clubbed him. But no, they just shot him. So something's wrong here. And this is what the British did. If you watch the movie The Patriot, that's what we're looking at in the future. If anybody has seen that, you'll know what I mean. It's pretty bad.
The Patriot was great with Mel Gibson.
Right, but if you think, though, in those days, the Patriots had long guns, and they were sort of at least close to what the British had in those days. We don't have anywhere near the sort of weapons. The founding fathers could never have envisioned how far ahead the military would get with laser weapons and planes and everything. They didn't have that stuff. But we were supposed to have equal and opposite power to keep the government in check, and we have failed to do that. And yes, there are certainly a lot of shootings, but what people have never heard in the press today in the last few weeks, the crime rate in the United States and the murder rate has dropped drastically since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
The trends have been going down and down and down.
And yet the government is developing more and more fear amongst people.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, they're spraying us with chemicals doing chemtrails. They are recklessly endangering the future of this planet. Something is going to have to give soon. They're intent on taking the guns away. They'll probably bring in the United Nations peacekeepers, they'll call it, to disarm the American people, along with Homeland Security, DEEP, every other agency that you can think of that's sneaking around our streets these days, you know.
Well, John, they usually get people to voluntarily give up things. That's what they do. They don't have to do it by force. They just brainwash everybody.
I was with some people on Saturday. We're talking about this guy's kind of it was a Palestinian group, and he was talking. He said that that today. He's been following the Patriot movement and everything else for years, and he said, Leo, the stuff that we were talking about 10 years ago, people, you know, looked at you like you had two heads. He says today you can strike up a conversation with almost anybody, and people say, I agree with you. 9-1-1 is real, or there is mind control things. Well, he says. He says people are really, really much more open to it today than they ever were, you know. And so he says something's really happening here. I think he's right. What do you think, John?
I think you're probably right there. We as a as a group of people, we're just radio show guys and listen to other radio shows, and when you talk and do the radio, we don't see the bigger picture, but the government does, and they're probably watching and listening to us right now, stations. So they obviously can feel and see that the pot is boiling, and
they know it.
It's coming. They want to disarm us before it becomes rampant. You can understand their reasoning. So yes,
sure.
there may be. If they take the guns, there'll be a civil war in this country overnight. People not give them up. Period.
I agree with you, John. And one main reason why I believe that. NPR wanted to buy out Q103 was to keep our mouths shut because we were gaining a very wide audience.
Yeah, and they've been buying up the powers that be, up all the mom and pop newspapers down in the Midwest, all along where the North American Union, the North American Highway, the one that's joining Mexico, Canada, and the United States, the Trans-Texas Corridor, I think is actually the proper name. You can Google that and go to CNN and watch Lou Dobbs expose the merger of the three countries into one.
Right.
That's why they have to disarm us also. Don't ever forget that. So it's coming, and they're going to be vicious. And when they take the semi-automatics, after that they'll become for your pistols, and after that if you have a knife, and after that they'll have their way with you for the rest of history. It will be our generation who were foolish enough to give them the blood, sweat, and tears of the rest of eternity of America's hard work. It'll be slaves upon us, is what I'm trying to say. They're going to make slaves out of us. They already have. Our jobs are gone to China, and we're taking crappy wages right now. Babysitters make as much as I make, and I'm a professional painter.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
think about that, you know.
Oppression of wages is just terrible, and the destruction of unions in this country is a concerted effort to destroy unions.
It's all part of the big plan, and that's what's called the New World Order. And the New World Order, there's no place for America. And they have said in some of their writings, there never can be another America. They always want to take it down, and they'll make sure that no other country ever becomes like this country, because we got too uppity for them, I think.
What do you think of the Olympics? You know, the great Illuminati games.
Yeah, I haven't paid much attention to it, but still waiting to see if there's going to be some big publicity stunt there. There'll be something happening there. I don't know what scale, but nothing will surprise me. Put it that way. It's right in their back door. The Olympics is just, like you said, the symbol even, the torch is the Illuminati symbol. It's the same one on the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
It's all there. I mean, in pageantry, But, John, I want to thank you for calling in tonight. I appreciate that.
And that was a great little audio piece he had. I appreciated that very much.
Well, it was just kind of short and sweet, but I just wanted to let people know there are eyewitnesses out there that have not been allowed to go on TV, but they're on YouTube. And these guys were in the cinema saying they saw the guy open the door and usher somebody else in. So
Lying.
Either the police are lying or the eyewitnesses are lying, and I don't think they have a reason to lie.
No. I mean, why would they bother? Why would they do that?
They're there.
Right, and if you saw these kids...
They saw it. You know, well, if anything, they'd have a reason to lie the opposite way, you know?
Yeah.
And agree with the mainstream media.
And you have to understand also, this isn't the last thing that'll happen, like the Aurora. There's more coming, and probably soon. So when you hear it, watch the first few reports very carefully.
Yep.
Because that's when they make they change it almost 20 minutes later. The first 5 to 10 minutes, if you happen to be at home, anybody here listening, record it and keep it in your mind, because that's when they try and change their story. Usually, you know, because they mess up, they don't get their things right after they do a false flag attack.
Well, that's why they suddenly found the manuscript or the writing, the notebook that James Holmes sent to a psychiatrist, which he never found, which was suddenly, it was held up for a week in the mail room, all right?
Yeah, right.
And they suddenly found it, all right?
How convenient.
And, and it has all the, of course, nobody's read it yet, but it supposedly has all the his plans. And
I'm surprised they didn't tell us Robert Ballard found it on the Titanic, because, I mean, this is about as believable as anything. These guys are just... There's no credibility left. They're disgusting.
I know, really. Well, we really appreciate what you contributed, and we hope you call again next week.
Yeah. Look forward to it. Yeah, it was a great show you had there.
All right.
Or even tomorrow night, if you want to call. We're on tomorrow night, too.
I will do it. Yeah, and again, I'll try and get some of the flyers out for architects and engineers for that showing of the movie down on August 22nd at the Town Hall in Torrington at 6:15, right?
That's correct, and it's on South Main Street, I think he said.
We
want to thank Cheryl Curtis for informing us about that, too, and setting up the interview. So, her program is on 90.2.
I can't recall now. You got me. It's on tomorrow, right, at about 12 o'clock.
Or something. I should have had
She's
that.
She's out of the University of Hartford.
University of Hartford.
0.3, I think, but it's close. To search around the 90s there. You'll find us. You'll know her voice.
Okay. I should have had that written down there, but
me too.
Anyway,
I should know. Sorry, Cheryl, if you're listening, I'm screwed up on that one.
Well, anyway, we'll talk to you again real soon.
Yeah.
And thanks for calling.
Okay,
and
good night, folks.
Good night, guys.
And we thank Wayne for calling. And we hope you see him on August 22nd in Dorrington.
Yeah.
So. All right. And
join us tomorrow night as well. We have plenty of news and views for you.
And thanks for listening, folks.
Yep. Good night.
Good night.